Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Academic Life Channel here on New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Malone. Today, we'll be talking to Brooke Lombardi about her experiences as a graduate student and a mother during this global pandemic. Brooke, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dana. It's good to be here.
I'm so excited to have you on the channel and to have you come
Me
on.
Too.
Thank you for agreeing to share your very valuable experiences for us at this time. So, Brooke, I hope that you could begin maybe by telling us a bit about yourself.
Sure. So I live right outside of the Raleigh area in North Carolina in a town, a very rapidly growing town called Apex, with my partner and our two girls who are 7 and 4. And I am a PhD candidate at UNC Chapel Hill in the School of Social Work. And I study perinatal health and the intersection between perinatal health and histories of sexual victimization and trauma.
Thank you. Could you go a little bit more into kind of what drew you to pursue a PhD and maybe speak a little bit more about why you chose social work and perinatal health as your focus?
Yeah, sure. So I went to a small undergraduate university in Kentucky. And I met some folks in Kentucky who were just kind of starting their journeys in working in the field of anti-human trafficking. And I was super interested in that and really just met kind of the right people at the right time and had the opportunity to travel and volunteer and work and live for a number of years in South Asia and Southeast Asia. I mainly lived in Thailand, but traveled around various different countries. And I was doing prevention and intervention work in the field of sex trafficking. And, you know, I got to do everything from volunteer coordinating to co-facilitating support groups to going to language school to babysitting babies so their moms could work. And these were really phenomenal and also really challenging experiences. And so then it was pretty evident for me that it was time to further my education. So it was 2011 that I moved back to North Carolina and got into a master's program, a master's social work program at UNC Chapel Hill. And also in that time I had my two kids. And after my master's program, I was really reflecting upon my experiences as a mother and was really drawn to becoming a birth doula. And so I did the training and the whole process and became a birth doula. And so there I was. I had my master's in social work and I was working doing some programs with the state with children who had experienced trauma and also practicing as a birth doula and raising children. And it was in that experience that I, you know, there was a number of things that happened. One is that I started to think about my experiences as a birth doula and supporting women who were pregnant and birthing and in the new postpartum days. And really thinking, gosh, like we know that so many women have experienced some variation of unwanted sexual experiences. And so how does that affect women when they're pregnant or birthing or postpartum? So that perinatal period, which is conception to 1 year postpartum is what we think of as perinatal. And I had never really thought about that. And it was these experiences as a birth doula that started to really mesh and mold with my experiences as a social worker working with people who had experienced sexual victimization. And then I think the other thing that really feeds into this is I had some really phenomenal faculty members at UNC during my master's program that were amazing professors, and I learned so much from them, and it was in my master's program that I started to think, like, I think I really want to teach, which I never really wanted to be a teacher, but it was watching these professors teach and really shape the lives of future social workers that started to maybe draw me to that area. So that's sort of a long story to say, like, I had these experiences as a birth doula and a social worker, and then I also was really drawn to teaching and higher education. And so after a few years of being out of my master's program, I was still here in North Carolina, now with my two kids, and I started to think, like, I'm ready for a PhD. And I knew that I wanted to go back to UNC, and UNC is a pretty competitive PhD program to get in, but I was really happy in my job, and I thought, okay, I'm going to apply, and I'm just going to keep applying until I get in. And if I don't get in the first time, I will apply again the second year and keep working. Well, I got in the first year, and I was so excited. And so there are six folks in my cohort, and now I am a fourth year, and have reached the level of candidacy, and am slowly chipping away at my dissertation, which I know we're going to get into here in a little bit. But yeah, that's kind of the main points.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing some of your story with us. And I want to circle back to that time around your undergraduate, and just note for listeners that we met back in your undergraduate days. And so I was a resident director, and Brooke was one of my RAs on my staff. And so we go way back. We stayed connected after her undergraduate, and when I left the institution, we stayed connected and have stayed connected and just grew closer and closer through the years. And those experiences of, you know, doing graduate school and having babies and all of those sorts of things. So we have shared many years together at this point. So I met you, I think, when you were like a sophomore or something. Yeah. Like that.
And our kids are pretty close in age.
Yes.
So we also went through the transition to motherhood together.
Yes. And so I like to provide that context for listeners to know that there is a history here, and a deep one. So, I do know your story, and which is why I asked you on the show. I think it's a very valuable story for people to hear. And I'm sure there are others who will connect to some of the things we'll talk about today. You shared about your program, so thank you for that. If you just, you know, just briefly, maybe tell us a little bit about what your research looks like, because you are ABD. So congratulations on that. That's a huge milestone.
Thanks.
And so talk to us a little bit about what that research is looking like. And then we'll kind of talk about, you know, from there, what this pandemic has meant for that for you. So if you want to start with the research piece.
Yeah, sure. So I think maybe even a little more background might be helpful. So for anyone who is an Enneagram junkie, I am an Enneagram 3. And so I, I'm a go-getter, and I'm like, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to make it happen. And so I came into the program, and I was like, all right, I'm going to graduate in 4 years and be in a tenure track position and be happily on my way. And needless to say, 2020 hit, and it's thrown a wrench in things. But my research is really around the intersection between past histories of sexual victimization and how that may or may not predict peritraumatic stress, so PTSD in the perinatal period. And so I look at recognizing, reducing, and treating peritraumatic stress for survivors of sexual victimization. And this really is kind of full spectrum from working with survivors to working with providers who will and do see these patients. So a lot of it is, you know, what are the ways that we can help providers? So, you know, OBGYN, midwives, labor and delivery nurses, doulas, lactation consultants, be more trauma informed, and really treat every woman as if they have experienced something, difficult. And then also helping survivors prepare themselves for the difficulties, the often very unexpected difficulties that the perinatal experience can be. You know, we very much think of birth and the perinatal experience as this idyllic time of just it being complete bliss. But we know that for survivors, it's really not like that. So my research is really focused on, you know, first bringing awareness to this issue. And then also, like, what do we do with this?
Okay. Thank you. So if you're willing to, I'd like to kind of switch gears and I'd like to go back to last March and the moment of the shutdown. What was that time for like for you as a graduate student and a researcher and a mother?
Yeah. So, so I had already reached candidacy, and so I was super excited to be, so I had just reached candidacy and I was super excited to be home and working on my dissertation and just jamming out in my research. And then the shutdown happened, and my oldest was 6 at the time and was in kindergarten and thriving. And my youngest was 3 at the time and was in daycare. And then daycare shut down. And then the school went to remote. And all of a sudden I had a family, in our home, and my partner, is an attorney, and she was home. So now all of a sudden, she went from going to work every day and me being home and writing and the kids being in school all day to all of us being home. And so I did a lot of that Enneagram 3-ing of like, I'm going to do this. It's going to be fine. It's not a big deal. We're going to make it. And then, you know, things shifted over time. I wouldn't say they shifted quickly for me. I would say it's been a process of sort of figuring out what I need to do that's going to be best for me and my family. I went from being very what's the word I want to use? Just quick and efficient. I think that's the best word. Efficient. I would put goals down for the week, meet them, to all of a sudden being really inefficient and really having to slowly make the shift of like, well, it's not that I'm inefficient. It's that the world has collapsed around me. And here we are, you know, in January, and the preschool that my daughter's at has been opened and closed and opened and closed with the high rates here in North Carolina. And then my daughter's been on a hybrid in-person remote track. And so we're still in it. We're still in the thick of it.
Oh, yes. Yes, we are. When you look back at that time now, and it's been almost a year. So as of today, we are at the end of January in 2021 recording. So it's been almost a year, close to it. And what stands out to you about that early time, that shutdown time?
You know, what stands out to me is that I just didn't know what was coming. I mean, none of us did, but that there was no way to prepare myself for the length and intensity and duration of how things were going to unfold. And so I look back and I was trying to proceed as normal when nothing was normal. And trying to make something, you know, something fit into, you know, this piece in my life that wouldn't fit of trying to do it all, of having kids at home. And then all of a sudden, you know, I would tell my colleagues. So one of the things that I didn't mention is that I also, I'm an adjunct and have been an adjunct at Elon University, which is a small private university here in North Carolina. And I would joke to my colleagues that, like, give me undergraduates every single day to teach, but trying to teach my kindergartner is horrific. and that was true. Like, I went from being home and writing to all of a sudden having to homeschool my kindergartner and having my 3-year-old run around. And, you know, I'll never forget, like, the day I come downstairs and it's like 7 a.m. and we're like in the midst of the shutdown. And she's like on the couch in her underwear eating chocolate chips. And while I have to like log my 6-year-old into a Zoom call that wouldn't work. I mean, that was just the life. So like, I was trying to like, tell myself, but I'm still going to get all this done. And here I am, like having a 3-year-old half naked eating chocolate chips and a 6-year-old who I'm trying to teach, you know, kindergarten to. It was wild, and hard and crazy. And all the while I'm trying to tell myself, but it's normal. We got this. We can make this our normal. I can do this.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Well, and to circle back to something else you said earlier, you said something to the effect of this idea of, like, you were telling yourself, like, I'm not inefficient. It's the world that has collapsed around me, in essence. And so, I love that idea, or just that sentiment, because it speaks to, I think, this internal mental work that so many of us are doing, or having to do, or like on a regular, sometimes minute by minute basis, right? Of reminding ourselves of who we are, at our core. I am also a 3 on the Enneagram. Sometimes it feels like you're, you know, trying to run in mud. Like, you have all these things you need to do and want to do, but it's just not possible, or it's happening at such slower pace. And so that mental and emotional work, that internal work that we need to do to remind ourselves that, you know, in some ways, like, it's, because I speak in relationship speak all the time, like, it's not me, it's you. It's you, the world. Like, but we have to respond and we have to adapt, right? And so our internal self-talk has to change, and sometimes our expectations, a lot of times our expectations have to change. And so, you know, I love that you, like, kind of, you know, give voice to that internal talk that so many of us, I'm sure, are doing in this time and have had to do, and are still doing, as you said. So in terms of, you know, the shutdown and the closing of schools, so you said you were home writing. So I was kind of curious if you could speak a little bit more on kind of what that really realistically looked like. Where were you and with the research piece? Were you, you know, working on lit reviews? Were you, you know, in the middle of, so maybe, you know, expound a little bit more on what your project is looking like, your dissertation project in terms of, you know, how you're collecting or generating data and how this has impacted your ability to do that.
Yeah. So, you know, so to provide a little context, my partner and I bought a home. Actually, it was the week before the shutdown. We signed a contract and bought a home, and we were renting a townhome just about 5 minutes away. And you know, at the beginning of the shutdown, I had set up a desk in our master bedroom, and then she was in what was our office because then she got moved home, and she also had to do like court calls, so she needed like a secluded office space. So I was like in our master bedroom, and it was, a really interesting experience to just get up and start the kids' days and go back to the bedroom and have this pseudo space there. and then we signed a contract on our home and then we built our home. And, so we moved in August and so now she's still working from home and we share an office. But yeah, you know, the kids are in and out. So, I have told people that like on my Zoom meetings that, everyone knows my now 4-year-old because she's often sitting in my lap. And I'm really thankful to be in the field of perinatal health because there is often someone else on the call who is nursing a baby or rocking a baby to sleep or whatnot. And then there's my 4-year-old who's just like making faces at the Zoom call. So that's kind of how my meetings go. But, you know, as far as writing, everything was also put on hold. And I think, you know, I think your question sort of speaks to this piece of transition of like, how did I get from, well, everything's normal to, okay, everything has shut down and kind of the reckoning is the way I think of it. Like, when did I have this internal reckoning of, okay, nothing is normal. Like I need to regroup here. And I think there were a couple things that happened. You know, one, like the job market crashed. So all the universities I had thought about applying to were on hiring freezes, are on hiring freezes still. And then, you know, one of the pieces of my dissertation is collecting qualitative data. And I'm working with some community partners who are doulas. And for anyone who is in the doula world, doulas were no longer allowed in hospitals, and some doulas are still not allowed in hospitals. And so my partners, you know, we went from like, okay, we're going to have this IRB approved and we're going to start recruiting and collecting to, we haven't started recruiting yet because, things were and still are crazy. And everyone is still trying to figure out, kind of what direction is forward in the world of doulas. And so things shifted there. And then, you know, just my own ability to sit and write. I'm someone who needs like solid blocks of time and quiet. And that's just not something that happens in my home these days. And so I think the internal reckoning happened when I realized like, even if I try to make this work, all of the moving parts around me are not going to keep up. And so I can either try to make all this work and push against kind of this tidal wave and collapse, or I can figure out what direction I need to move. And so that was when I really started to think through, okay, what would it look like to shift my plans and to really give myself permission to shift gears here and add on some more time, because my, as far as my qualitative project goes for my dissertation, like this isn't moving very, very quickly. The job market is not great at all. And my kids are still home. And so all of these pieces are not changing. And so what do I need to shift? And so thankfully I have a really wonderful chair and committee, and, you know, everyone's understanding. And so, here I am, this go-getter of I'm going to be in and out in 4 years. And that shifted, and it needed to shift. And now I know it's for the best. Yeah, it was definitely a process to get there. And so, on a given day, I'm writing, but also making lunch and setting up a Zoom call, or in a meeting with my 4-year-old waving hi, or my 4-year-old who still needs to nap and begging her to go lay down for a nap. You know, so it's still wild over here. But I think what has shifted is, giving myself more space and time, and knowing that, if I'm in this for a really solid product of a dissertation and, something that's going to shape me as, an academic, like I need to give myself the time to make that happen and make it happen well, rather than rush through it. Cause maybe I could have finished in a year, or this year, but like, it wouldn't have been solid, and it wouldn't have been, something that was me. It would have just been kind of forced. And so,
That's good. Thank you. Well, can you talk a little bit about, and I love that idea of the shift, that internal shift, internal reckoning, as you kind of phrased it. So can you talk maybe a little bit more about, like your timeline? So how has that changed? Is there even a workable timeline for you? Because it sounds like that some of your qualitative work with doulas, is that correct? Like the qualitative pieces with the doulas, and that needs to be happening, or ideally happening within the hospitals, and that's just not happening right now. And so is that piece just sort of on hold? And are you moving forward in other elements of your research? So what is that? How has that shifted, you know, in real terms, the focus of what you're doing on the day to day? And have you just shelved some of that, or how have you made those adjustments with your research?
Yeah. So, you know, the qualitative piece is with survivors and providers and doulas. And so that has shifted in the sense of, we went from planning on conducting focus groups to, we'll still have focus groups if people are available, but we're going to move to individual interviews, is the plan. And, but also like folks capacity from mothers to doulas to providers, everyone is at max capacity. So we're really aware that asking people for their time, even an hour of their time, is really hard these days. And, you know, particularly when everyone has kids home, or most people have kids home. And we know that physicians are just maxed out because many physicians are being required to add on additional clinical hours because of the high, you know, rates of COVID. And so that is going to happen slowly but surely. I have moved my timeline from graduating in May of 2021 to May of 2022. And so what that means for me is I will have the rest of the semester and the summer and next school year to work on my dissertation. And that just feels like so good to me and right for me. And then I think for me, it's figuring out what pieces of that project I take on at what times. And so, you know, for my more quantitative sections of my dissertation, being able to do that when I have folks on my committee more readily available. And so that will be more of a school year project, whereas maybe writing one of my, I'm doing a meta-analysis for another part of my dissertation. And so that is something that I plan to really focus on this semester and this summer, because I won't need as much support in that as I would in doing my, you know, more rigorous analyses. And so it's really thinking through like, what are other folks' capacities with everything going on, and really putting that into from now until April, when my dissertation is due to the grad school, April of 2022.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I know from experience that, you know, a dissertation takes a lot of moving parts to generate that data and to plan that data. And there's a lot of pieces that are dependent on if you're doing field work or, you know, having participants and that sort of thing that's is dependent on other people. And just hearing you talk about what that has meant for your planning and the pieces of your dissertation in the middle of a global pandemic that has just really kind of taken the rug out from underneath everyone and every kind of institution that you're working with I'm just impressed. I'm impressed that the level of flexibility that you and so many other graduate students are having to display at this time, and that shifting, and that, I mean, it takes a lot to plan and organize, you know, the multiple dimensions of a research project like this, and then having so many moving parts that change daily and regularly with the regulations and what's allowed and what's not, that it's quite a challenge. And it really, I just, you know, part of the, you know, wanting to do this episode was to name these things, to talk about these things, so other graduate students hear other stories that maybe resemble some pieces of their own. So they know, like, and that you, I mean, I think we know in our heads we're not alone, but sometimes hearing someone else's story just helps you really know it on a deeper level that you're not alone. And this has just affected so much by way of research and for graduate students, especially, who are on a clock in a way and paying for courses and paying for their programs and anticipating job markets and things like that. So it's a lot to deal with. I want to talk a little bit about, or circle back to, something else that you said, because one of the things I wanted to ask was kind of like how this year has changed you and the lessons you're taking away from this time. And you kind of addressed that as well in terms of, you know, almost doing this, that internal reckoning with, you know, that number three kind of achiever part of you. And I can relate this idea of like, you've always operated a certain way in the world. And now the world has so drastically changed that no matter, you can't will it, you can't work harder, you can't make a better plan to make it work necessarily, because there's so many other pieces outside your control that affect that. So, you know, you spoke to that earlier, but I'm wondering, you know, how do you anticipate, do you think that's something you're going to take with you beyond this time? Do you think that's a permanent change within you? Or is that just kind of a temporary, you know, shift to get through this time? How do you anticipate, or what are your thoughts about that internal shifting that you've had to do and the lasting effects of that for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's been, a really significant lesson in my life. And if I'm being honest, this is something that I, some of this wasn't so new to the pandemic, but the pandemic definitely exacerbated, highlighted, the intensity of it was like none other. But just this idea of like, is this timeline, is what I'm doing truly best for me? And is this, am I trying to create something because I feel like this is what I should do? Because I am this high achieving person, and a lot of my identity is wrapped up in this high achieving person. Is this what I'm doing because this is really what feels like peace in my body? You know, one of the things that I try, I'm not always great at, but I try to do is sit for a minute with things, or a few minutes, and kind of feel how it feels in my body. And does my chest feel tight? Do my shoulders feel tight? Am I taking shallow breaths? And, you know, I think about the decision that I made to add on this extra year. And initially I was so resistant to that idea. Because I don't need that. Why would I need that? I can make anything work. You know, there's a lot of things that have happened in my life and I've come out on the other side, but so I can do this. But when I think back to where I was then, like everything was tight when I think about my body and how I was sitting with all that. And when I had that call with my chair and I said, I got to call it. This isn't going to work. I can't make this happen. There's, again, like you said, that piece of the moving parts, like my moving parts are not moving. I'm moving, but nothing else is moving. And actually I think I'm moving, but I'm not. And so I got to get all of these moving parts and myself moving, in sync. And that means adding on some more time here because I want to make this work and I want to make this work well. And I want to be really proud of what comes of this dissertation and the process of it. You know, it's not just the product, but it's so much more the process and the pieces that I'm taking away and learning from it as I do it. And so, you know, I think back to where I was and it didn't feel good in my body. And I wasn't listening to that. I think I recognized it, but I wasn't listening to it at the time. And then I think to like, after I got off the phone with my, or Zoom, which is our new, you know, meeting platform. After I got off Zoom with my, chair, and I had talked to another person on my committee, as well. And after those conversations and that decision had been made and everything was good to go with adding on more time and this additional academic year. My chest wasn't tight. I could take deep breaths when I thought about it. My shoulders were relaxed and I thought, yeah, that was not just the right move because it was what had to happen with everything, with all the circumstances of what's going on, but it was the right move for me, and myself and my family and my career. And so I think this was another lesson in, what's driving me right now? Is it the internal dialogue of I'm Brooke and I'm a mover and a shaker and I make things happen? Or is it like, I'm making this decision, even though it feels counter to the high achieving parts of me, the high achieving person of me, I'm making this decision because it is for my best. And so I think this was a huge lesson in that of when it's necessary to take a step back, whether it's small decisions or big decisions, and go, how does this feel? And what is my driver here? What is my internal dialogue of why I'm trying to push through? And that is, you know, again, like I said, like this is not necessarily a new lesson, but I think I think that we continue to experience things, so we can learn our lessons more and more, and be quicker and better at recognizing, what needs to shift. And so this was a big one for me and something I will most certainly take away. And as I think about, you know, this is a whole nother conversation for another day, but as I think about, what it means to be at, a very prestigious Research One institution and the pressure to be applying to other Research One universities. And, you know, I think about how that feels in my body versus how it feels in my body to think about applying to some smaller schools that maybe aren't research one, but are also really good schools that would afford me more work balance and family balance and things like that. So I'm not there yet, but when I think about like other big decisions that I'll have to make, this is another lesson for me. These pandemic lessons, and having to shift my timeline, and rethink my dissertation process and all that has been really valuable in, for reminding me of, upcoming decisions that I'm going to have to make and making sure I'm paying attention to what's driving those decisions, what voices I'm listening to, where my internal dialogue lies and where the external dialogue lies. Because for those of you in, you know, academia, those external dialogues, with other academics go deep, and, making sure that I'm making decisions that are for me and for my best, and not because this is how other people do it, or this is how I was doing it when I was in my first and second year and, you know, could be more efficient and, you know, all those things. So yeah, long answer. Yes, I will 100% take these lessons away. And it's been a really big reminder of the need to slow down and really think about how things are working and are they working and what might need to shift.
Those are valuable lessons, not just for this time, but for life in general, I would say. We have just a few minutes left, but when this pandemic is totally behind us, which seems almost impossible to imagine at this moment, but let's, you know, live in that world for a minute, that space, if we can. And you're looking back on this period of your life. What do you hope to be able to say?
That's a good question. I sort of think I can say it now. And I hope to be able to continue to say it, which I imagine that I will, that despite the craziness of my partner and I working from home and our two young children being home so often, and all of us doing this unplanned, intense day-to-day together, one of my current takeaways, and I really think and hope and know that one of my future takeaways will be how beautiful this time has been, and how deeply grateful I have been and will be in the future for the unplanned intense times together. The nightly dinners, you know, before the pandemic, like I said, my partner is an attorney and work is intense. And so we didn't eat dinner as a family very often. And now we eat dinner as a family because we're all home. We watch, you know, America's Got Talent with the kids at night, and or play Uno or whatever it is. And it's a really beautiful time that I hope we never get back again because of another pandemic, but we probably will never get back again because our kids are getting older. And, you know, sitting on the couch together, watching America's Got Talent and playing Uno probably won't be their priority for much longer. And so it's been this really unexpected, beautiful time, and something I recognize my gratitude for now. And I really think I think into the future, I will very much recognize the beauty of this time later on.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I think for a lot of people, I've heard similar sentiments, and it's a hard, like I think about that, and I think that is wonderful that so many people are taking time to enjoy those moments. And I just want to recognize though, too, like even as you were speaking, and describing it as a beautiful experience, which for you, I'm so glad that it has been. And I know many people who have experienced similar things. But my heart also, I feel like we're living in this really hard time where even talking about things that are beautiful feels really weird, because I think about so many people who, you know, have been just devastated by the pandemic. And so I think that's an important piece to recognize here too, that, and I know you feel this and I feel this, mm-hmm. just grateful to be healthy, to, you know, still have, you know, employment opportunities and things like that. And thinking about, and keep being mindful of those and who haven't. And so, you know, I just wanted to acknowledge that because I know I was feeling that even as you were speaking, I was resonating with what you were speaking about. And I'm sure there's so many who would resonate with that. And then there's also so many who would, you know, maybe even recoil a little. You do trauma work. You know what that's like for people who have experienced trauma. And this pandemic is like a big collective trauma for everyone. I know you teach and I teach as well. And you know, trauma-informed pedagogy, I just did a presentation on it this week. And, you know, it's part of how we teach now, using that kind of pedagogy. And so just recognizing that. And so that's all I wanted. I just felt like the right thing in this moment to recognize that, yes, there has been so much beauty. And I'm glad that you have that memory and that experience of this time. But even as you've spoken about throughout this episode and this interview, there's been a lot of traumatic experiences and things that I know you haven't spoken about. And many people are in the same boat, things we say and things we don't say of the levels that this pandemic has, the levels of impact of this pandemic. And so it is I feel like it is just this bittersweet time. So whenever there is a moment of that sweetness, you know that there's someone else who's experiencing the bitter, and that's really hard and important to recognize, I think, for all of us.
Absolutely.
And so I want to thank you again, Brooke, for taking time to share your experiences, your journey, your story, your research with us. It's been really wonderful talking with you. I'm sure that, you know, so many people will resonate with some of the pieces that you've shared. And I hope that you and your family continue to stay safe. I know that you have family members who work in the hospitals down there in North Carolina and are doing really front lines work. So I hope that you all continue to stay safe. And thank you. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm Dr. Dana Malone. This is The Academic Life, and you've been listening to New Books Network. Please join us again.